You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the analyst at the World Cup. We've seen an interesting game today. England at last back on the winning track. We'll review that performance today against the Indians, a very good 30-run win for England. And also later, we're going to talk to Courtney Walsh, the great West Indian fast bowler, who of course now is the bowling coach of Bangladesh. They still have a chance of qualifying. They were practicing today at Edgbaston in preparation for their game on Tuesday against India at Edgbaston. So we'll talk to Courtney in a little bit about his views on the tournament as a whole. But first, just to look back at that fine England performance and one or two of the questions asked about the Indians afterwards. Simon, what was your thought on it overall, England's performance?
Well, absolutely vital win, and that's the bottom line, isn't it? They just had to win the game. They were under pressure, and they dealt with it. They won a good toss. I think winning the toss gives you that freedom, and they batted really well. I thought the really key aspect of the game was how England dealt with India's spinners. What was it? One for 160, something like that, off 20 overs. Bairstow and Roy, magnificent against the spinners. And I thought that was what won England the match, really, how they countered India's wrist spinners.
Yes, actually, after the game, Johnny Bairstow, man of the match, of course, credited VVS Lakshman for some of his work against spin. Of course, he was the coach, one of the coaches at the Sunrisers Hyderabad, where Johnny played this IPL alongside David Warner. And VVS Lakshman is a very influential character, always around the team, the Sunrisers team. I spoke to VVS afterwards. He's over in England doing commentary and analysis for Star TV. And I just chatted to him afterwards about his work with Johnny. He just praises him highly, actually. He says, you know, he's got all the basics. He's a super player of spin. Just sort of tried to help him not be too premeditated against the bowlers, but to be, you know, very sort of strong and decisive in his actions against spin, and be positive, and just maybe try and get a bit lower in the crease. He has a habit of standing upright when he's facing the faster bowlers, but just get slightly lower to the ground, a slight forward press, a little bit of a flex of the knees when he's facing spin, but just to be positive and not be too premeditated. Play the ball on its merits, but be positive. And Bairstow's, I mean, it was almost slightly frenetic, some of the play against the spinners early on in the day, but in a controlled way. It wasn't reckless. And the power of some of those shots, I think it was 8 sixes in that opening stand from Roy and Bairstow. And I also thought that the influence of Roy was huge. Even in the first over, Mohammed Shami, you know, it was quite a tense sort of set-up before the game and how would England go. Winning the toss, obviously, a massive bonus, but you've got to take advantage of it. And Roy, in that first over, one good ball from Shami forced through the offside off the back foot, which was nothing wrong with the ball, and that got the innings going. Then also in the first over, Shamu went to pitch up and Roy just stroked it, sort of almost caressed it, wide of extra cover, two early fours to sort of ease the nerves and sort of ease Bairstow into it, because you sort of feel sometimes with Bairstow, he's a slightly fragile character, but with his sort of more forceful partner, Jason Roy, reinstalled at the top of the order, making a good statement in that first couple of overs, that seemed to get Bairstow going, and he was more positive as well.
Yeah, I thought he played a magnificent innings. He actually fielded brilliantly as well, Bairstow. The simple fact is, Roy's a class opening batsman in white ball cricket. We might see him in red ball cricket as well for England this summer. I mean, lots of things, I think, went England's way. But they, you know, they made them go their way as well. But things went their way. I mean, the fact they won the toss, I think, was really important. They batted first without so much pressure. Bairstow nicked two off the inside edge past his leg stump. I mean, another day, you know, they cannon into your leg stump and you're on your way early. Roy was caught down the leg side. India appealed. It was turned down. India weren't sure. They didn't review. You know, he had gloved it through, and even in a sort of bizarre way, Roy's injury, where he was struck on the arm, and that allowed him not to field. And you know, with that hamstring injury, that was, you know, a great way of resting, if you like. Unless, of course, that, you know, there's severe damage to the arm, and then that, of course, that provides England with another problem. But it was a sort of major bonus in a way that Roy didn't have to field with that hamstring problem. The other side of that, of course, is that Rahul didn't field very much for India, and they had Ravi Jadeja out there and took a brilliant yeah. catch to get rid of Roy. So it's, you know, it was swings and roundabouts on who fielded for which side. But it was sort of one of those days when things went England's way, and yeah. they needed to. And they didn't have, I mean, in a way, they didn't have a great deal of luck against Australia first up at Lord's the other day. There was an LBW shout that could easily have gone their way. There was the drop catch, or well, the slice to backward point. Vince couldn't take it. You know, there was playing and missing. Okay, England bowled a bit short against Australia, but you know, things didn't quite go their way. Whereas today they did, and you know, England benefited. But you know, they made it count, didn't they? That was the England that we've become used to, really, with that, you know, aggressive opening partnership. And when, you know, Roy and Bairstow are going, and with that, you know, that is when England play at their best.
Mm. Yes, I spoke to Andrew Strauss before the game, actually, and we were just sort of standing on the pitch, a good pitch, by the way, not a used pitch, one that would reward, you know, good cricket, basically, and not be too much of a lottery batting second. And I said to Strauss, you know, what would you say if you were in the dressing room, what would you say to the England team before going out for today's match? What kind of philosophy would you recommend? And he said, I just think we should go back to playing the way that has set our standards so high over the last two or three years. Be fearless, be aggressive, be positive, just, you know, take the attack to the Indian bowlers and go, you know, just make sure we go back to those really basic tenets that we've stuck to over the last two or three years, to back yourself and be fearless. And that's exactly what England were. And there's that old cliche called fortune favours the brave. And in that match that you mentioned in England-Australia at Lord's, Australia, a big drive from Aaron Finch in the first over to Wokes, flew over the top of second slip, but they were obviously going to be positive, the Australians, without being reckless. And I think generally they had the luck in that day, certainly in the morning. And England today, those bits of luck that you said, the inside edges, the caught down the leg side that could have been reviewed on another day. But England just, they were brave, I thought, in that first 15 overs or so.
Definitely.
Some pretty good balls bowled, but England backed themselves and short boundary. They made good use of that. The spinners, when they came on, were pumped over the leg side or back over the bowler's head. Just an excellent choice of, you know, selection of shots. Shots that generally those players have executed well over the last few years. I thought Stokes as well was excellent, and he's continued his general high performance levels in this tournament. 280s already, and a 70 today, off only about 50 balls.
It's 380s actually. It's 380s and a 70. 380s.
Yeah, he's got over 80, 79 in the end. So just generally sort of reinforcing the excellent work of the top order. And the fielding was back to its intensive best. You know, the fielding standards England set in that first match of the tournament against South Africa, outstanding. The catch from Stokes, but also the run out on the boundary, and generally some really sharp work in the ring. And today, actually, we worked out that Bairstow as well as all the sort of work he did with the bat, running around the field, racing around the field, he covered just under 18 kilometres in the match. So, not surprisingly, he was a bit red-faced at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, he was brilliant in the field, Bairstow, and a magnificent 100 as well. And you talk about the fielding, Wokes's catch, absolutely vital as well to get rid of Rishabh Pant. It was a sort of strange chase from India. I mean, a lot of the comment was about how good a pitch it was. I thought it was actually a really good pitch for a one-day match because obviously it benefited the batsman. But I thought there was enough there for the bowlers to work with. And, of course, England exploited that in the opening overs. Wokes was excellent, bowling a tight line. And there was the drop catch, which could have cost England enormously. Rohit Sharma dropped early on by root. I bet he was relieved at the end of the day's play. England bowled really well. But then there was that sort of bizarre finale to the game where India just seemed to accept they were going to lose. I just couldn't understand it. I mean, it was absolutely perplexing. We've seen Dhoni do it before, saw him do it at Lord's last year in one of the most bizarre one-day matches I've ever seen. I think I just inexplicable that his actions that day. And today it was just odd. No real attempt to win the game after Pandya was out. I mean, I just don't know what to say about it. I just don't understand how you can play like that at the end.
No, well, I can tell you what some of the Indian fans said about it afterwards. I mingled with some of them as they were leaving, and they were quite happy, actually, because they said, well, we don't want Pakistan to get through. So India was sort of deliberately stopping them from getting through, and that's fine, and we'll hammer you in the semis or the final. We'll turn the tables on you sort of thing. But today it was more of a sort of tactical performance. I'm not convinced about that particularly. Yeah. I think they like to leave their run chases to the end. Dhoni has that way of doing it. He thinks he can still get, 15 and over off the last three or four, but they just left it far too late. But interestingly, Virat Kohli said after the game to Sanjay Mandrekar, who was interviewing for TV, there's going to be a bit of a post-mortem. There's going to be some questions aren't asked in the dressing room about why that approach was adopted. I think when they did that at Lord's, the match you mentioned a year or two ago, they sort of accepted it, but now they're not going to accept it anymore. And I think the finger will be pointed at Dhoni a bit, that you can't carry on like this. You've got to make a bit more effort and not leave it so late.
Well, the other point is, Simon, that India are not mathematically yet through to the semi-finals. They still have a little bit of work to do. So whether they were just protecting their net run rate a bit and just trying to make sure they got as many as they possibly could in those last few overs, you could have had a situation where they just played all sorts of shots and got bowled out for hardly any more runs. But I just didn't understand it. But anyway, the point is India still have a bit of work to do. Not much. I mean, I think they could lose their last two games and still qualify for the semi-finals. Those last two games against Bangladesh on Tuesday and against Sri Lanka. Really odd, and also what was I thought was a really intense game as well, kept my attention all day, and it was really building up. When Pandya was batting well with Pant, you thought this is on. When Kohli and Rohit Sharma produced that fine partnership, you thought this is on. They're going to have to play well, but as it turned out, they didn't play quite well enough. And that Wokes catch was a massive moment in the game, getting rid of Pant. And then when Pandya was caught at long on that, that was it. But India, they just accepted it. Well, that's not the way to play.
No, you're right. You're right. I talked to the groundsman Gary Barwell before the game because there's been quite a lot of talk about the pitches and are they sort of special ICC ordered surfaces which don't necessarily favour England in particular and maybe do favour the subcontinental teams. All the groundsmen completely banish that idea. Mm. The ICC basically tell the groundsmen you've got to prepare the best pitch for a one-day game that you can. Now, that's slightly different from the information or the advice they get from the England Cricket Board when it's a bilateral one-day series. They say, make it as flat as possible. But so the ICC is more about a proper good pitch for everybody. There's a slightly different emphasis, I suppose, but the groundsmen look to try and produce the best pitch they can. And the issue that they have, interestingly, is that whereas they're preparing pitches for one-day internationals, they've only got one major pitch to prepare, because obviously the one-day international series move around the country. So each ground, Edgbaston or Headingley or whatever, only have to produce that one pitch. Whereas for this tournament, they've often got to produce five pitches, all kind of fairly close to each other. So they don't quite get the same attention, the same meticulous attention to detail, the same endless rolling, perhaps, as they might do. If you've got sort of 3 or 4 weeks to prepare one pitch, they've got two or three weeks to prepare five pitches, and often only a couple of days in between. So we've got another match here on Tuesday at Edgbaston, the India-Bangladesh game. So, you know, ground staff are sort of... And they're not given any more resources, no more manpower, no more money to prepare these five pitches for the tournament. So you can sort of understand why they're not perhaps quite as blemish-free as the pitches for one-day internationals generally.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point. And I watched a game on Saturday that was on a used pitch at Lord's between New Zealand and Australia. And I have to say, it was quite hard work, you know, well, for everybody, you know, for spectators in blistering heat, for batsmen, especially for New Zealand's batsmen on that surface against that Australian attack, and for commentators as well. It was a really grinding match on Saturday. And, you know, people say, oh, what's the best pitch for a one-day international? I think the best pitch for a one-day international is when you can get about 280 to 300. I think 230, 240 pitches. It's a long old watch. It's a long old haul, that. I think you need to have that situation where a batsman can go out there and play thrillingly, and you can get sixes. I think spectators want to see sixes, but I think also as well, it's good to see a pitch where, you know, there's a bit there for the bowlers. Like, I thought there was a bit there for the bowlers today. The bowlers might disagree with me, but, you know, if you bowled that length at times, and, you know, slower balls mix things up, you know, it wasn't easy at times. Bumrah, magnificent again, wasn't he? Bumrah was absolutely superb, and so too was Archer and Plunkett, magnificent for England as well. So, you know, there was something there for the bowlers if you were good enough.
And talking of bowlers, Courtney Walsh, as I mentioned earlier, the bowling coach now of Bangladesh. Must be a bit odd, actually, being a bowling coach of a team like Bangladesh when you come from the great West Indies team of the 1980s and 90s, used to the four-pronged fast bowlers, people propelling the ball down from 6'5" to 90 miles an hour. And now he's working with a bunch of sort of fairly military medium pacers and obviously some good spinners. But he doesn't mind. So I asked him generally what he thought of the tournament so far.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. I mean, as I said, the weather was a little bit of a damp at the start of it. There's nothing you can do about that. But I think towards the end now, the weather, the cricket, everything, I think pretty exciting. And it's good. I mean, it's my first World Cup not playing. So it's good to be with a team and, you know, that we're enjoying it.
Well, what does it feel like? Give us a comparison about, is it in a way more stressful being a coach than being a player in the World Cup?
It can be in some sense, because as a coach there's not a lot you can do in the middle of a play. You can give advice, you can do as much as you want behind the scenes, but then the players have to do the stuff in the middle. So sometimes you bite your nails or you worry a little bit more. But that shouldn't be the case. So it comes with experience that you try to get over that. But once you realise that it's not in your hands, then you just do the best you can off the field of play.
And what have you thought about of the tournament overall? I mean, obviously Bangladesh started slowly. You've played some good matches. As a whole, looking at the teams in general, do you think Bangladesh are getting closer to the top three or four teams in the world?
Yeah, I think so. I think they showed that consistency. They played some good cricket, as you say, and they're doing the right things, improving all the time. I mean, I have a lot of time for the players. The players take pride in their performance. They want to do well. They want to do well for the country. They want to do well for themselves as well. So when you have that sort of hunger from the players, you know, it can only get better. And I think they're now starting to believe in themselves a little bit more as well, which helps. And the performance to date has just been very good, very consistent, and very happy for that.
What are you working on with them specifically? What little things have you been pleased with that you've worked with them on?
The little thing that I've been very pleased with is the level of consistency. You want them to be more consistent in the performance. Think on the feet, on the field of play, and, you know, they've been doing that a lot better. And as I said, for me, the biggest thing was the consistency, and, you know, they've shown that. And that's very, very pleasing. And then the hunger for wanting to do well and the pride for playing for your country.
Is there a chance that Bangladesh could produce... I'll just wait till that. Is there a chance that Bangladesh in the future could produce a bowler like you, someone of a taller stature and, you know, extra pace?
Yeah, there's every possibility of that. There's some good young quicks down there coming through. Once we can get them strong enough and enough cricket under the belt to get the exposure with the experience, there's a lot of possibility for that. There's some kids down there now that are doing pretty well and just lack of the opportunity to sort of get into the know-how and to perform and play. The good bit is that they're playing a lot more cricket in Bangladesh now, so these kids will get a chance to play some more. So hopefully in the next couple of months some of these guys will come through.
And you were famous for your longevity, keeping going, not buckling down to injuries. What was your secret to staying fit, and what have you told them about, the quick bowlers, about how to stay fit? What advice have you been able to pass on?
Yeah, but you have to be able to play with some type of injury, manage it, know yourself, know your body, and know that limitation, know when you can't go any further. But don't just cry off if you feel a little niggle, because you're never going to be 100% fit with the amount of cricket that's been played. So you have to be able to play through some of the injuries, some of the injury barriers. Pace yourself, but the most important thing is to know your body, know what you can do, when you can do it, and how you go about doing it.
That's good advice, actually. I know what you feel, because there's always something hurting.
Always
as a bowler,
something hurting,
isn't there?
Yep.
And what about, as a whole, the other teams here? Have you been able to watch much cricket, you know, other than the games you've played in?
Been able to, not as much as possible, because we've been practicing sometimes we travel, so you get to watch bits and pieces here and there, but not as much to say sit down and watch an intense game. We'll watch a couple of games, but not very, very all of it. It's been good cricket, what we have seen. We've seen some very exciting finishes, and we've watched a couple of the highlight packages, which has been good as well.
And how about the West Indies? Have you seen much of them? Have you had much to do, much encounter with them, watching them play? Do you have a view on how they've been going?
Yeah, I've seen... I mean, we played against them. I've watched a couple of the games, and we're in Ireland together, so I've got a good idea of how they've been going. And I'm sure that they're very disappointed with where they are now, based on, you know, the calibre of players that they had here. But, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. And as I say, I watch a couple of the games, but, you know, the first and foremost focus is with the team I'm with and trying to get us to do as well as we can do.
Yeah, and what's been the view in the Bangladesh camp about the tournament overall? I mean, I know what it's like in Dhaka. Living in Dhaka, it's probably pretty hot. They may be used to the rain, I suppose, but not necessarily the coolness. So have they felt it's been quite hard going with the weather that they've had to deal with?
Well, I think when we arrived in Ireland, that was tough because it was very, very cold, and they weren't accustomed to that coldness. But after we get through to Ireland and the adaptation we made there, it became a lot easier. And to be quite honest, we had two good breaks where the boys were able to freshen up. I think that has helped us as well, because it's been a long tour, and we were able to, after Ireland, get a chance to just unwind, start afresh. And then coming into the series, it's the same similar thing happened twice. So the boys are key, they're up for it, they're happy. And, you know, once you have a happy bunch of guys together, then that's all you can ask for.
And you're still in contention. So how do you see the next few days panning out? What's going to be the approach?
Well, we have got to just try and be positive and try and win our games, whatever games we have left, because that gives us a chance. It doesn't give you automatic qualification, but if we can win our last two games, it gives us a chance of getting the semi-final. So I think that's what we're thinking about.
So you've got a game here at Edgbaston.
On Tuesday.
Against
India.
Yeah.
And then Pakistan at large on the Friday.
So two pretty hard games.
Asia Cup. Two very, very hard games, but... I mean, we're here to enjoy, do the best we can, and just leave everything on the field of play.
Quite funny, actually, looking at Courtney. Well, she's put on a little bit of weight since he gave up cricket. I mean, he was an absolute stick-thin cricketer, and you didn't know how he kept going, actually. He was known as Duracell when he played for Gloucestershire, because he never broke down, and he kept on going and going and going. And he had this amazing stamina and sort of resilience. You do, as a bowler, just have to overcome niggles and pains every single day. There's something that hurts. But I always found, actually, as a bowler, that, you know, you'd go into a game thinking, oh God, my knee hurts or my ankle hurts or something like that. But as soon as you got going and got warmed up, you forgot about it. Or, even worse, sometimes you've got another niggle, so you forgot about the one you had before and now you're managing something else. You know, I'm not sort of trying to sound the kind of sympathy, I'm not trying to get the sympathy vote for bowlers, but it is a hard job and it does hurt virtually every day. And I think that's certainly one of the things he's passed on to his the people he's mentoring for Bangladesh. They have still a chance of qualifying, of course, with their two games to go. And if England lose against New Zealand and Bangladesh win their last two games, they could still sneak in.
Absolutely, yeah. There's all to play for Bangladesh. I mean, England play against New Zealand on Wednesday. And after the high today, you don't want any sort of... Well, they certainly don't want any complacency creeping in because England still have got a big task ahead of them. But, you know, it was such a big and important game for them against India. You know, I don't know whether he's, you know, just a couple of days rest onto the next game, whether there's, you know, there's inevitably going to be a bit of a dip for England, which they need to... You know, obviously counter in what's a vital game against New Zealand. And also, New Zealand just come off the pace a little bit. I mean, I've you know, they played in some really tight games. They were well beaten by Australia. So, you know, the pressure's on them a little bit, on their net run rate. They've got 11 points. You know, Bangladesh can catch them. The only problem for Bangladesh, I think, is, you know, they're playing India on Tuesday, which is, you know, a really tough game for them. But if they were to win that, I mean, they are right in there. And they play Pakistan at Lord's on Friday. So, you know, it's exciting the last week of qualifying. I think we feared at the start of the tournament and even perhaps a week or two in, it wouldn't be like this. And we wondered how the league stage would play out. You know, would it be tight? Would it be interesting right to the end? Well, there's a chance that that's the way it's going to be. It's certainly going to be tight and interesting until Wednesday, until that England-New Zealand match, and things might become much clearer after that game. And then there's, three more days of qualifying and it all ends on Saturday. But, you know, well done, England. They've saved the group stage of the World Cup by losing to Sri Lanka and losing to Pakistan and losing to Australia. They've made it really interesting. But now, I suppose now it's time to sort of nail down, if possible, a semi-final place. But, you know, still a really exciting last week to go in this qualification group.
Yeah, and you've been watching Australia. We should just touch on them. They're looking really quite dangerous now, obviously having beaten England at Lord's and then really easily overcoming New Zealand. Mitchell Stark, 24 wickets in the World Cup already and still got about four games to go. So they have... And I felt with that Australia-England, the defeat of England at Lord's, that there was the knowledge of knowing how to win tournament cricket, you know, which comes from obviously Stark and Warner and others who played in the World Cup final in 2015, with people like Langer and Ponting behind the scenes as well. They know how to overcome these tight situations and force your way through to the semi-finals and final stages, whereas England have no one in that capacity at all, in the coaching staff or in the team. So that is one little sort of hurdle they have to still overcome.
Yeah, that's true. The other thing about Australia, and have a look at it, is that, of course, they batted first in most of their games. The only games they haven't batted first in, the Afghanistan match was the first game they played, which they sort of potted along to victory, and the India match, of course, which they lost. They like to bat first. They've generally batted first in their games so far. So, and I, you know, it's been a bat first World Cup. You when you bat first, you generally speaking bat under a bit less pressure. Of course, they did have to face some pressure the other day with that new ball against England because the conditions were quite good for bowling. But they dealt with it. They had a bit of luck, but they've got that strong opening partnership. You know, so what would be interesting is if we get to a semi-final stage and they are forced to bat second, and then the team who bats first makes a decent score against them, you know, a workable score. Then we'll see what this Australian side is made of. But, I mean, they look good. They really do. And, you know, the Lyons made a difference to them, I think. He's a very good bowler. He's made a difference. Stark, absolutely magnificent. Cummings, excellent as well. And, you know, on Saturday, the top two failed for just about for the second time in the tournament. But they found runs. They found Carey. Carey played superbly. Khawaja managed to chisel out a decent 80. So, you know, they're a tough side. And, you know, perhaps they are the team to beat in this tournament now.
Well, well played to England. An outstanding performance today. And they've done one important thing, and that is they've beaten the only team who were still unbeaten in the tournament. Pressure is going to be the thing, the critical factor now going forwards. And I suppose we go back to an Australian with that in mind. The Australian Keith Miller, whose, of course, famous quote was, "Pressure, what's pressure? Pressure is a Messerschmitt up your arse." After his efforts as a pilot in World War II, there's still going to be pressurised moments in this last week of World Cup qualifying. We'll be following it, of course, and we'll come back to you towards the end of the week and see how all these permutations of the final four play out. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.